Clubhouse.
Hi, can I talk to you for a sec?
That's such a cute dress.
Thank you. I practically wrote your ex-wife's book. I hope you don't expect me to edit your new girlfriend's book as well.
What are you talking about?
She said you're the one who came up with the second book idea. When did that happen?
I ran into her in Chicago.
Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because I didn't think that it was a big deal.
We were still together when you went to Chicago.
Yeah, I'm not seeing Quinn.
Really? Because it seems like something's going on, and now I know that's why you wanted to split up. You had a backup plan.
God, that had nothing to do with Quinn.
Well, then I guess we have nothing to talk about.
Yep.
We both go back to our business.
Yep, see ya.
Hello, and welcome to the Hell or Good podcast for younger from Pod Clubhouse. I'm Sheila McGann.
And I'm Emma Good.
Tonight, we're discussing Season 7, Episode 3 of Younger. This one is titled FKA Millennial. Did you know what FKA meant?
I don't, actually. I didn't even look it up, so you're going to have to tell me.
This is a TLA, three-letter acronym. This one is formerly known as.
Yes. Okay.
Because at first I was like, wait a second, what is that? And then when I watched the episode, I was like, okay, it's formerly known as.
I'm showing myself as a Gen Xer here. Like, I'm so not with all the acronyms that came out in the internet. I was bad at it when the internet first started, so I haven't got any better over the decades. This episode was written by Dottie Dartland-Zicklin and Eric Zicklin. This married writing duo have lots of younger writing credits, including Hot Mitzvah from Season 1, the one where everyone gets secretly doped by Lauren. And that's also the first time that someone finds out Liza's secret, which was when Josh discovered that she was a 40-year-old woman.
Wow.
I know, that was a good episode.
That was a favorite, for sure.
Definitely. And this episode was directed by Andrew Fleming. Has he been directing all the episodes so far?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think 1 and 2 were definitely by him as well. I think the next one's by him as well.
He's just taking all the credit this season.
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the shift in tone.
Yeah, it definitely is a different tone, given that Liza no longer has to lie about anything. If you haven't had a chance, check out our previous podcast of the earlier episodes.
And before we get started here, you should definitely check out our Spotify playlist we've created. It's called the Hell or Good Younger Playlist by Pod Clubhouse. It's a little bit of mood music to help you through the days in between the episodes.
All right, let's dive into the episode, shall we?
As a reminder, just a little bit of, you know, footnote on the show, we assume that you've seen the episodes. So there are definitely spoilers here. So it's less of a recap and more of a discussion. So, Em, what was the highlight of this episode for you?
For me, it was definitely the hot Aussie surfer, but, you know, I'm a little bit biased towards Australians. What about you?
I'm a little biased towards Australians, too. Em and I know each other from college way back in the day, or uni. I did a student exchange to this wonderful place called Wollongong, and I met these fabulous people who overlooked the fact that I was a Sheila living in Australia, which is very funny.
Well, we just thought it was hilarious, really.
Yeah, everyone thought I was pulling a big prank for a long time. Like, no, really, what's your name? So, yeah, so I'm a bit biased towards Australians, too. So I really liked this edition. I thought it was very serendipitous that you and I are doing this podcast. And then they plunk in an Australian. So, you know, we can get some authentic references if he's actually telling us the truth about some of these Australian isms.
Yeah, I can definitely do that.
Yeah, so I think he was a bit of the highlight for me. I didn't like all the Quinn stuff, so I'm gonna focus on the positive. I'm gonna focus on the hot Aussie surfer with the hot cover.
What more do you need in a book than a good cover?
So this actor, Matt Passmore, he plays Kai Manning. I'm assuming Kai Manning is a play on Mick Fanning.
I'm guessing that too.
Okay, so Mick Fanning is a world-class, well-known surfer. He's possibly most well-known this side of the Pacific for having punched a shark.
I've heard that as well. So, no, he's a pretty big surfer. I must admit, I'm not massive into the surf world, so I don't know much about it, but I've definitely heard of him.
Yeah, definitely. So when I heard Kai Manning, I was like, oh, that is Mick Fanning. So are you familiar with Matt Passmore's work?
I kind of thought he looked a bit familiar. And originally I wasn't even 100% sure if he was Australian or not, because the accent was sometimes we sound weird, I think, surrounded by other accents. But I looked him up. And he used to be on McLeod's Daughters, which was one of my favorite TV shows many, many years ago. And he was also in a series called Underbelly, but it was the second season, I think he was in, not the first season, which was the one that everyone loves. If you ever hear about Underbelly, it was based on a true story. It's really wild, about the underworld of Melbourne. And you think it's all made up, but it's actually really real, and you can even find the newspaper articles about what happened in that period. Highly recommend, if you can, to watch Underbelly. The first season was amazing.
I'm going to have to try to seek that out. That sounds like something I would really like. So I'm not familiar with Matt Passmore, though. I guess his work hasn't kind of made it over this side.
Yeah, I think the only thing I saw that maybe may have made the US was Jigsaw. He was in that movie, which was like many years later after Saw. No, oh, those Saw movies.
I would not have seen that. No.
Yeah,
no.
Like one of those horror movies.
Give me true crime. Give me things where people actually died. People where they die fictionally. I'm like, I'm out. Too right. Scary for me.
Then you need to watch Underbelly, because that is like totally all true crime. And like I said, absolutely insane. It was just so many gangsters killing each other. It was crazy.
I'm just sad, Emma. We still haven't seen a Diana sighting.
It just doesn't feel the same without her, although I did notice that Lauren made a few references to her diva, meaning Diana, and does sort of bring her presence a little bit, but she's no Diana. No one can replace her.
This is really my only criticism so far, three episodes in, is I'm just not liking the dynamic without Diana. Like, I feel like I'm missing that snarky, I still love you, but I'm going to keep you at arm's distance. You know, the wit and wisdom of Diana, it's the only thing that I'm criticizing so far. I don't agree with this change in how they're setting up the format of making her a recurring character. Because, I mean, like, you know, we're a quarter of the way into the season already, Emma, and, you know, you need something.
I guess it's hard with the whole coronavirus, and that seems to be the problem that's caused it. And you couldn't really replace her with another actress, as you've seen other shows do before.
Oh, I would shut it off.
Yeah, exactly. So I at least I haven't gone down that path of like trying to replace Diana with another actress, because that always annoys me. Yeah, she's a big missing presence, I have to say.
Like, I'm not quite a purist, but like there are certain characters that I do not accept substitutes for, and Diana would be one of them.
Well, I think, you know, I don't know the actress's name because I'm terrible at things like that, but
Miriam Shore.
Yeah, she just has a presence about her that I just don't think anyone else could pull that off in the same way. So other than Diana missing, we had missed Josh last episode, but we did get him in this episode. So should we maybe start with Josh?
Yeah, give him the honor.
So right at the beginning, he finds out from Liza that Charles and her did not get engaged and have now broken up. But I feel like he didn't seem to react. Like, he reacted a little bit to the news, but he just sort of reacted as, like, concerned for her. I didn't feel like he reacted as, oh, this might be an opportunity for me. I'm just wondering if he's moved on.
I was wondering if he did move on, because, like, you know, he kind of made a face like, oh, but there wasn't, like, anything past it. I guess he could see, too, that she was in a lot of pain. Like, she was masking it, you know. I'm not sure if he's moved on. I always feel that at his core, there's always, like, a hope with these two.
But I thought you would have seen that, but I felt like you didn't really see anything like that happening. Who knows? Maybe things will change in the season. Who knows what will happen?
I noticed it too, that he was just like more like genuinely concerned that she was hurting, as opposed to...
But just seemed more like a friend rather than... Which is good, because they are friends, but you also think that there is always a possibility of more, but it just felt like that wasn't there anymore. It really was him just being concerned as a friend.
So he has a moment here with the musician's assistant. So do you think this is going to lead somewhere? There was definitely some chemistry, I thought.
I mean, yeah, there was definitely chemistry there. So, you know, she stayed behind for the tattoo. Just feels like there's something maybe brewing there, particularly, you know, like, it just seemed like he wasn't really... I mean, maybe he felt like it's too soon to try and chase after Liza, I'm not sure, but it definitely didn't feel like he was wanting to start something with Liza, so maybe he's just decided to try someone else instead.
Miss right now.
Yeah, exactly. You can't always get, you know, Miss Right straight away. Sometimes you have to go with who's right at the time. So, you know, it was interesting how they met with the musician that came in wanting tattoos on their face. And, yeah. You know, I was just like, oh, my God, do people really do that? But it did make me wonder, you know, does he try and stop people generally to get tattoos that he think they might regret? I mean, there's so many shows these days to fix, like, mistake tattoos or people that now regret their tattoos. Do you reckon that's a big part of his job generally, trying to stop people getting tattoos?
I think so, because last season when they're at Diana's bachelorette party, they're like, let's get tattoos. And, you know, she says she wants to do something she's going to regret for the rest of her life. He stops them. He's like, no, no, no. He goes, y'all are drunk.
That is true.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was obviously with his friends, but I think it's a code that he has. I think that he takes his art seriously, that I think he would talk people out of it if the moment wasn't right, or if they came in too emotional, or maybe as blasé as Floaty V was. I think that that's a well-honed tactic that he has of, like, you know, these need to tell a story, let's not rush into it. But yeah, he was skillful. I don't think this was the first time he'd done it.
He does see his work and, you know, people rave about his work. I think he does see it more as an art. And you don't want to have people that regret the art that you put on their body.
Right, and the time it takes.
Exactly. It was good how he handled her.
So let me ask you a question. Floaty V, is she meant to be like a crossover between Cardi B and Lizzo? I was getting these vibes.
Yeah, I definitely felt the Lizzo vibe. I must admit, I don't really know much about Cardi B. I've heard of her name. I don't really know who she is.
It was more the name. I think the artist herself was more of a copy of Lizzo, who's actually, her music's been featured a couple of times in the show. Cardi B would not be featured in the show because she's got a salty mouth, let's put it that way.
Okay. I've really only heard her name. I don't think I've ever heard any of her music.
My husband heard WAP for the first time a couple of weeks ago, which is a well-known Cardi B song, and he was shocked and appalled, is all I'm going to say.
Wow. And he works in the industry too.
So. He does. And I was like, please don't tell me that you have to learn that for a wedding. He's like, no, it was something at work that they were hanging these wireless access points, WAPs. One of the guys he works with started singing it. He's like, what in the world are you saying? Cardi B has a different play out of that TLA, that acronym. Here we go again with the acronyms. Hers is wet ass pussy. So.
Oh my God. I would never have ever guessed that.
Yeah. It's far more intrusive than a FKA millennial.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep, there we go with the cultural knowledge, dropping bombs. All right, speaking of dropping bombs, Quinn, again, blech. She's back, and it now looks like we're going to be definitely seeing more of her, with Charles now having bought her book and inspiring her book. And I'm saying this with a face that I'm smelling something bad. There's nothing about Quinn that I like. But are you surprised to see him so willing to work with her again?
Definitely. I mean, you know, she almost bankrupted his company. I just don't know why you would let someone like that back into your life again. It's such a breach of trust. And he just seems to have let her back in with, yes, she apologized, but I don't know. I feel like even if she apologized, you would never sort of like give that level of trust to someone again. I mean, I guess in this situation, she's not an investor anymore. She is just an author, so doesn't have the same level of control she had previously. But I still just would rather cut someone like that out of my life than keep them around.
But I feel like Charles is such a laid-back kind of a person that he may have taken her apology to heart, I think.
I don't know. I just feel like if you've run a company, surely you've come across dodgy people in your life and you know when to trust them and when not to run a successful company. I feel like for him letting her back in, he's a little bit naive or something.
Either that or he definitely just needs the book in order to make sales. I think that always comes down to like the bottom line. And, you know, he's really that, he's slick. Like, he's not the one working directly with her going forward. It's going to be Liza or Kelsey as the editors, right? You know, he's just signing her, giving her some pointers, which I didn't like either, because each Kelsey and Liza have some sort of burned history with Quinn.
Yeah, as we learn at the party at the end of the episode, it's Liza that ends up being the editor. And you're like, what's he doing to this poor girl? He's proposed, he's broken up. Now he's, you know, having a person that she's already struggled to edit a book with and that she doesn't like to edit a book with her again. And I just sort of like, are you trying to torture Liza or something? It doesn't make any sense. There was that other thing that she learns that Charles inspired the book when they spoke in Chicago when they were still together, and then she accuses Charles of having like a backup plan with Quinn when they broke up. But I don't know, do you think that was really a fair sort of accusation from her to Charles?
You know, I actually put that in as the clip at the top of this episode, because I just thought that conversation was so bitter on both sides. I don't know if the criticism is fair by Liza. I mean, she's obviously very hurt, but I don't think that Charles consciously had Quinn as a backup plan. I think that was a more organic pathway between them, becoming friendly again with the apology from Quinn. You know, her apology was heartfelt. So, I mean, when somebody really comes back to you after burning you bad, and they come back with, you know, heartfelt sincerity, there is this ability to thaw your opinion of that person and really look at them in a different light. So I don't think that he had her as a backup plan for Liza, but also he doesn't really deny it strongly either.
Yeah, he doesn't really at all.
He was off on his own at this party. I think he was a bit stunned at the attack, you know, from Liza. But yeah, that quote of her saying, we were together in Chicago, you didn't think to tell me, you know, well, it just seemed so convenient that you had a backup plan. Like, ugh. These two are hurting so bad and they're not talking about it with each other. I don't know if Charles is talking about it with anybody. We know that Maggie and, you know, Kelsey and Lauren, to an extent, are Liza's confidants. But yeah, these two are just hurting so bad. And I just, you know, I don't think there's any good way for them to have a conversation right now without it becoming what this conversation was.
Yeah. And it also seems a little bit hypocritical. I mean, you could almost say that Josh has always been Liza's backup plan when she was with Charles. She knew he was uncomfortable with having Josh around. Yes, as she said at one point, she would, you know, break things off with him. But, you know, as we know, after the wedding, she didn't do that. You know, we can get it. I'm obviously Team Josh, so I've always liked to see the two of them together. But, you know, it seems unfair to sort of criticize him for having a backup plan when it feels like she always had one. And maybe that's why Charles was feeling a bit insecure and proposed. Like, I think we spoke about that in episode one or the season six catch-up. I think we mentioned that maybe he was feeling insecure because of Josh and that's why he proposed. So I felt like it was a little bit of an unfair assumption that she made with Quinn.
Quinn, too, with her disingenuousness, her just underhanded, can you tell I really don't like her?
No, I hadn't noticed at all that you didn't like her. Like,
I know, I was trying to be subtle about it, but, you know, she's fishing for information when she's asking Charles to smooth things over with Liza, you know, and she refers to her as his girlfriend. Mm. I don't know, do you think she was detecting something like a shark smelling blood in the water?
She's clearly a super intelligent person. She wouldn't be a billionaire if she wasn't. You know, I think she can see the dynamics that are happening, that clearly something has happened between the two of them. They're not anywhere near each other. They're barely looking at each other. She can tell something's happened.
Yeah, it just goes a long way too. So we were spot on with our predictions with Quinn coming back into the picture at the end of season six, that she was going to be a big wrinkle in this episode.
Just one series of her was enough. I'm not sure I can handle the second season of her.
Yeah, I know. All right, so but moving on to Liza this episode. Redmond, a favorite recurring agent, pitches Aussie surfer Kai Manning to Empirical, but they don't have any concept of what the book of what the book's actually going to be about. They just have a cover, and it's a very nice cover. But what did you think of Kai?
Well, clearly, because he's Australian, I was like, oh, it's great. We've finally got an Australian on this show. And I love Redmond. So the fact that he brought him to them as well was just great, because he's just so much fun. But he does seem to have led quite an interesting life. But I feel like he's got, like, I don't know, ADHD or something like that. I feel like it's going to be very difficult for them to get a book out of him, because it seems like a person that just does all these different things and just moves on to the next thing without sort of thinking about what he's left unfinished behind. So I think it could be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, he's like playing like this quintessential like Aussie character where, you know, I'm really laid back. It'll come together. No worries. You know, it's just, yeah, it'll happen. That's his philosophy, it sounds like.
I feel like I could be a bit like that sometimes too. That sort of like, oh, it will work out.
Yeah, I do too. And it's like, meh, you know, if I sit back, things will happen, you know.
I feel like I'm sometimes too laid back about things. So, but generally they do work out. So why get stressed about it?
Yeah, you know, it's not a bad philosophy. There's no worries philosophy. I get asked about it because I still say it. Like if somebody says something, I'm like, ah, no worries.
Yeah, I say it all the time.
It's not a thing here for the most part. It's like the Hakuna Matata kind of mentality, right?
I don't know. It's just, it's so common here. I just don't really think about it. But I realized the other day, I say it a lot in like instant messages at work and stuff. I would just be like, no worries. And I realized I used to do that in the UK all the time. Be like, yeah, I'll be fine.
Yeah. So, but it's definitely not an American kind of a philosophy where everything needs to be worried about and everything is a what if scenario. And so I'm going to switch gears a little bit, seeing as how we're talking about Aussieisms and stuff like that. While I am familiar with Aussie geography to an extent, Tangambangala really sounds like a made-up place.
Yeah, it's actually a real place, and my brother lives not very far away from it.
Shut up. Really?
Yeah, it is a real place. It's in Victoria. It's not far from Wodonga, which is actually a fairly big inland city here, so we have some strange sounding places here. I must admit, I didn't know it straight away because it's like a tiny town of like 400 people, but the region it's in is not that small. You know, Wodonga is one of the largest inland cities in Australia and stuff like that. So it's not too far from civilization.
So it's not near the coast then?
No, nowhere near the coast at all. It's actually, and this may surprise listeners, it's actually near the Snowy Mountains in Australia. We do actually get snow here, and it's sort of on the road. Not a lot, and in very restricted places.
Very specialized places. I mean, I lived there for 2 years. I was there through winter and never saw snow.
I actually have seen snow on Australia, Christmas Day here before, which is middle of summer, so a little bit weird. So it does happen. The snowfields in Australia generally need a lot of artificial snow to make them actually skiable. So yeah, we don't get snow like the US or Europe or pretty much everywhere else in the world gets.
I was quite okay with that, the fact that I didn't actually need a winter coat for winter. I was good with that.
Yeah, I rarely wear a coat or a scarf or anything like that here. It doesn't get cold enough. People wear that stuff, but really I don't understand why it's not that cold.
Yeah, you just need like an extra layer and you should be okay.
Totally. So with Kai, I noticed a bit of a spark in their initial meeting. Do you think something will happen between Kai and Liza? Because he certainly seemed interested from the moment he saw her.
Oh, yes, definitely. There was definitely some smoldering looks between the two of them. Like, I definitely felt that Liza was just like, oh, okay. And I just don't see her being able to say no to the advances of a hot, sexy surfer.
Well, you're single. Why should you say no?
And she's in a place where she needs to have some just fun.
Exactly.
Feeling bad after Charles, like she definitely needs, you know, some sort of distraction to get her to move on.
Yeah, and they seem to connect a little bit at that party as well. You know, she was talking about part of the reasons why her and Charles broke up. He seemed to get her philosophy a little bit more of not having to have the labels and
in the beer gardens. Yeah, so they abscond away from this party and they go to the beer garden after the particularly loud outburst with Charles. You know, he's talking about, you know, having a near-death experience and then deciding after that he wasn't going to do anything that he wanted to do. That's the philosophy that her and Josh talked about, this no labels, no defining. Yeah, so I think that there's definitely some kindred spirits going on here.
Yeah, I'm hoping to see more of the two of them.
Yeah, but Liza also mentioned like being like hurt from her marriage and stuff like that. That's also, I think, a big driver to this not wanting to be labeled and defined. Her being like married and a housewife and not working, you know, she's still recovering from that. You know, that took her a long time to shed that persona that ultimately led to her having to lie about her age and everything like that. So I can totally understand why she doesn't want to rush back to that.
Yeah. And I think that's what Charles was trying to do, is really rush into that. And maybe he likes the security of marriage or something, but you know, you need to allow people time to get over things. And as she said in episode 2, you know, we can maybe bend together, I may change my mind. And I could totally see her changing her mind in a few years' time, particularly if her and Charles are still together. But why rush it? You've barely gotten together and you suddenly want to get married? I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
And you brought up the timeline before in one of the prior episodes we were talking about. It's really only 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's been 7 seasons now, but it's only 2 years in her, you know, lifespan. So 2 years is not a long time if you're going to be, you know, getting back into a seriously committed relationship like marriage.
We just need to see how this goes, but I do hope to see Kai and Liza together. That would be a lot of fun, I think.
Who doesn't want a hot Aussie surfer in your show?
Why not? If you can have one, why not have one?
And exploit it to the fullest.
Exactly. So the other sort of important relationship we haven't spoken about yet is Kelsey and Liza. So Kelsey had a not so great episode. She found out that Zane is now a publisher. And I really feel the way that Kelsey and Liza dealt with this was quite cool.
The building that they're in is this swanky building, right? And they get a tour of it earlier on. It's actually from Claire's boyfriend, Rob, who's, I guess, he's like the building manager, so a building owner.
Or estate agent or something. I think he's trying to sell the place.
Yeah, he's trying to sell, like, I think condos in there. But he introduces them to the wine cellar. So there's this, like, 100% soundproof room that, you know, he says it could be used for a podcast studio. I'm like, I would 100%... use this as a podcast studio as I struggle to soundproof my little recording space here. Maybe a little bit of a wine cellar mixed in, but I would definitely use it as a podcast room.
I think for me it would be a wine cellar all the way.
Liza's like, do you need to scream? Like, let's go. And just adorable, the two of them, yeah, in the wine cellar, and all like the kitchen staff are just working around them and they're screaming their heads off, and I could use that.
I know, but I also love how Liza at that point doesn't even know what she needs to scream about and is just like, I'll find you a place to scream.
Yeah, she's just reading Kelsey's body language like, do you need to scream your head off?
No, I love that. That was just showing how well they know each other and just look after each other. I feel that she just got Kelsey out of that situation. And, you know, afterwards you can see Kelsey and she felt so much better and she was able to actually go back into the party and sort of shake it off a bit because she had that emotional release to sort of get past it initially.
I agree with that. And it's the reading of Kelsey that Liza is so good at. And this is why these two, I ship them as such friends, you know, like the best kind of friends that everybody should have. But can we talk about the fact that Liza was in a marching band and played trumpet?
Yeah, I picked that up as well. And I was just like, really? She does not seem the type.
I was in a marching band. I understand those heavy wool uniforms and maybe not We Will Rock You, but I was definitely in marching band in high school and I played the baritone.
We don't really have things like that in our high schools.
You guys would die from the heat.
Well, that, and also I think we just don't have that many sort of organized activities in our schools.
It's not really a sport. Like, you guys are big into sports. Like, this is like,
yeah,
this is, I mean, you do have to be fit in order to be able to play, walk, sometimes run across a field. But it's kind of dorky, but I love it. And I'm very proud of my marching band days. I feel like it was a very good character building experience for me.
Our schools are just so different because we don't really do sports through our schools or anything like that. There is a little bit, but generally, if you're into sports, it's done by the local town and you join like the local town competition. You don't really have like a... There's a few school competitions, but it's not the same. If you're really into sports, you're in with the local town competition.
Yeah, we say here, like, you're basically rooting for laundry because you're basically rooting for a t-shirt.
Yeah, you do remember what rooting means in Australia, don't you?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just couldn't resist. Has, yes, a very different meaning in Australia than it does in the US.
Yes, rooting here is you cheer for a team. Rooting in Australia is what Kai wants to do to Liza, it looks like.
Yeah, he wants to give her a good root. So. Yeah.
These are some of the Australianisms that, you know, I had to painfully learn. At usually at the hands of, you know, great laughter. But it's all good. Again, a character building experience. And something that I recommend everybody do. Get out of your comfort zones, people.
Australia is a great place to do that.
Oh, yeah. I'll be your booking agent. I'll tell you where to go. I'll tell you where not to go.
So to get back on track, let's talk about Lauren and Josh, because I had a bit of a friendship moment in this episode. I particularly like their text message exchange before they went to a party with Claire and Rob.
Yes. Oh my God. Lauren is like the perfect wingwoman. And the two of them, like, there's nothing else behind it, which is refreshing in a friendship between a man and a woman, right? She's not into him in any kind of a way. So it's just a pure friendship. And they just genuinely enjoy each other's company, being flatmates and roommates. And so, and then this text message exchange, I think, is hilarious because it's like, well, I can either make us late or we can be on time, depending on how you feel about this guy.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Because it is daunting. I mean, like, he's going to his ex-wife's boyfriend's party in this massive building that's very showy. That's a lot. That's a lot of, you know, emotional weight to be carrying around. And Lauren really knows how to lighten the mood for a lot of people.
And we certainly got to see the gentrification of Brooklyn in this episode, I think, as well. Don't think many locals could afford to buy that place. What do you reckon?
No, not with a wine cellar as part of the package deal. Yeah, definitely not. This is a good example of what's happening around New York, is that these, you know, low-key neighborhoods like Williamsburg, like Astoria, like Long Island City and Queens become these targets for these high-rise apartment buildings, and it basically start pricing out a lot of the locals.
They do the same in London as well, where in places like Southwark, which is the council area I used to live in, they basically bulldoze the old council buildings. So basically, you know, the ones where people rented off the government at cheaper prices, moved all those people out of London, essentially, because they couldn't afford anywhere else, and then built like multi-million dollar apartments instead.
Yeah, that's essentially what's happened here, is that they have been taking old, like, factory buildings, knocking them down and building these high rises. Like, if you were to come now to New York and you would take the train out of New York, out of Manhattan into Queens, you would just be like, when did Queens get, like, skyscrapers?
Have they got skyscrapers now? Because I remember it was quite low rise.
They are high rise because now you've got the East River view of Manhattan. So actually, friends of mine live in Long Island City. They live in one of those huge towers.
Oh, wow.
So, like, anytime that they show, like, a screenshot of New York, like, Midtown looking east, you'll see these high-rise buildings. Like, the big one that was there when you were here last was, like, the City Tower, the Citibank Tower. Now that's just one of many on the Queens side of the East River. Yeah, there's been a huge explosion of real estate, and it's expensive. But just getting back to Josh and Lauren, I think also walking in with somebody like Lauren, because she is very brash, not in a bad way, but she's very much a statement piece, right? She walks in and you know who she is.
She doesn't get overwhelmed by places either. Like, she is who she is, and she won't sort of lessen herself just because of the occasion or the place or anything like that. She'll be the same person wherever she is. And, you know, having someone that constant, as much as she's wild, she's still quite constantly wild.
Right. She's someone you can rely on. And, you know, and she knew that Josh needed that in that moment because, you know, again, this gentrified building in Williamsburg now being, you know, hawked by his ex's boyfriend is, you know, that's a lot of ego to kind of, you know, come up against. And I like that she says that, like, you know, it's okay, Josh, you're still pretty too. In that text message exchange. I thought that was cute.
They do have a good relationship, the two of them. It's nice to see that.
Yeah, I like that they're expanding on that because in the vacuum of Diana not being there, Lauren is definitely the person who can fill the void, not replace. She's got the same type of energy that you sit up and take notice when she's around, and she's always got something explosive to say, or it's going to make you sit and be like, what'd she say?
Well, it's nice also because I felt in season 6, we didn't see a lot of Lauren. It felt like we saw bits of her. She didn't have her own storyline or anything. And now that she's a bit more in the Empirical company and things like that, she just feels a bit more of a part of the show than she did maybe in the previous season.
And I think the show is better for it, really.
Definitely. All right. Well, I think that's everyone discussed for this episode. Should we end with another meditation with Maggie? You know, she always has the wisdom.
Yeah, we had a good one this episode, and she was no different here. I really liked how unassuming she is. Like, she's just able to walk up to Charles. You know, again, we noted this earlier. He's standing alone at a party. She offers, like, her sadness. Like, she's, like, sad that her, you know, he and Liza broke up, and just doesn't pause to, like, make the sound awkward. She just says, how are you doing? like not expecting him to explain that part of it, the relationship, but she just wants to know how he's doing. Like, this is her at her core, like the type of person she is. Like, she's not going to, you know, pick sides, and she's not going to try to make anybody feel uncomfortable. Whereas, you know, somebody like Quinn would definitely seek out that awkward moment, I feel.
I feel like some people would do it as like a lip service, but I think with Maggie, she really means it. She's a compassionate person, and that really shows. And you know, even when Liza broke up with Josh and they were not really having much to do with each other, she was always there for Josh.
Yeah, that's another friendship that really got explored, and I really like how they portray Maggie as just a friend for all and someone who can be just trusted.
She definitely is the sounding board for everyone, it feels like, in this series. Except for maybe Diana. I don't think they really have much crossing over, but that's about it.
Hey, if they cross over, I think Diana and Maggie would be a very fun friendship for sure.
Definitely.
I just wanted to play the clip here. This is when Maggie and Charles are talking at the party. This is the wisdom that she offers. So we'll play the clip.
I never thought you guys would end it on a technicality.
Wasn't a technicality.
In the end, I think I never really had her full heart.
Well, that's too bad. Because you did.
Emma, what did you think about what she said here? This is where Maggie, you know, said she didn't think that they would end it on a technicality. And Charles, he says he never had her whole heart.
I can kind of understand why he thinks he didn't have her whole heart, because I think he always felt part of it was with Josh. I think he felt really threatened by Josh. But, you know, I do like Maggie's sort of saying of it's a technicality, like, why are you having such a hang up about whether she wants to get married right now or not? You know, like we've said earlier, it was very early in the relationship. They hadn't previously discussed it or anything, and then suddenly you make this gesture of a proposal and feel embarrassed maybe that she didn't immediately say yes. It does feel like it was a bit of a technicality. I kind of liked Maggie's wording of it here, and the fact that he felt he didn't have a whole heart. I don't think by proposing is how the way to get it either, if that's what he was feeling.
I think it comes back to, believe it or not, the ad for Infinitely 21 towards the end of season 6. I think that's where this came to a head with Charles. Yeah. Because there was a couple of pictures of Liza and Charles that were taken to the shoot, and it just wasn't flattering. It didn't paint them in a good light. Whereas then Josh and Liza, it was so, I mean, I don't want to use the word again to sound cliche, but it was so organic. It was so natural between the two of them that their chemistry was just, it was oozing out of them, that the photographer just like happened to snap a moment between these two that just became magical. And I feel like that moment was where Charles like sort of maybe became a little bit more impulsive about like needing to quote unquote win Liza.
I think definitely, but I wonder if it was also because she flew all the way to Chicago sort of in a panic about him seeing it, that he felt that she did that because she was, what you could see in the picture is what she was really feeling. Because he made a point, I remember at the time, oh, why did you feel the need to rush here? I feel like he said something along those lines back in season 6, so.
Yeah, you're right.
If it wasn't such a big deal, why have you come? Anyway, I think that covers the whole episode. I feel like we spoke a lot for this one.
I know. Well, you know, we had some little tangents, and, you know, just find us endearing on these tangents. They do ultimately relate back to the episode, we promise. But it's also a fun way for you to get to know us, too.
Yeah, and to clearly get to know Australia, because, you know, why not?
Yeah, Tangabangala. It's on the way to Emma's dad's house.
It is, because dad lives near the snow.
And then Australia has snow. See, like, it's trivia. It's all good things here, guys. Thank you all so much for listening. We really appreciate it. If you could head over to where you get this podcast from to rate, review, and subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating if you're loving the show. It definitely helps other people find the show so they can get as much enjoyment out of it as you do. We have the Spotify playlist for you to listen to. You can connect with us on social media. We are at Pod Clubhouse on all the things, all the social media. It's at Pod Clubhouse. I can be found on Twitter at Shields McGangsta. We appreciate you all for listening. Thanks so much. We'll see you again for episode 4.
Yes, can't wait.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.